Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
My headphones are shedding.
Or is it just cat hair?
They're black plastic flakes, so I hope it's my headphones.
I was kind of disappointed. I was hoping you would introduce our names with the Mortal Kombat voice, Lyle.
Oh, yeah. And won't explain that at all. I guess that'll become apparent later on in the episode. So I was doing some homework, and on YouTube is 10 Things I Hate About You.
I love that movie.
Yeah, so I decided to watch it for the first time.
Isn't that based on, like, a Shakespeare play?
Yeah. Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
Yeah. I guess the titles sound alike and all that.
10 Things I Hate About... Oh, yeah.
Never really noticed that before. Yeah, wow.
Taming of the Shrew. 10 Things I Hate... Yeah, I guess.
I think the writer said that. My wife is a huge fan of it. So we have, I think, the making of DVD. Mm-hmm. So I think the writer, the director said that that's one of the reasons for the title.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
So
what do you think of it, Lyle?
I liked it. Ah, yes. Sorry. You just asked me what I thought about it. You didn't ask me to elaborate. Have you seen it, Chris?
I have.
No, you times. Have. Wayne?
I have seen it, and I remember not hating it, though I don't remember much more about it than that.
That's strong praise.
From me, yeah.
I wonder if there's still an hour after the movie of him pointing out the flaws. No, it was good. There was some funny jokes. The actors they use, even for the antagonists, are likable. Mm-hmm. So you enjoy watching them.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was on YouTube, and it was on, you know, the recommended things, and I still had homework to do, so I watched the movie Step Up for the second time.
Oh, second time.
Yeah.
As good as the first.
Step further up?
Yeah.
No, it's like step
you
up
missed
again.
Certain nuances, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been watching True Blood Season 6, which I think I'm up to just finished Episode 7. So that's pretty good. I'm liking it. Trying not to give Lyle spoilers because he hasn't started watching it yet.
Yes, I have them all recorded.
But a lot better than other seasons where only one of the plot lines is I'm finding kind of boring. But other than that, I think it's really good.
Nice. I'm up to Season 7 on Deep Space Nine, but I won't go any further because I don't want to give any spoilers for that.
Hey-o. Had you not watched it before?
No, I started watching it when it first came out, but because of my work schedule, I worked at a restaurant, so I was always at work when it was on, so I always wanted to watch it, but I kind of just never had the chance until recently a friend of mine has the whole set on DVD, so he lent it to me and I've been devouring through it.
Ah, back in the days before, like, TiVo and On Demand and all that stuff, when if you missed a show, you missed it.
Exactly, it was gone.
Oh, you mean the Dark Ages when you had to actually put a cassette into the VCR?
Exactly.
Yep. It's like, well, how do I work this out? Well, it's timer.
Set the timer, hope you got it right, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, wrong day!
Just end up with a little blinking 12 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but, because I remember I dropped out about midway through the first or the second season when the show wasn't really that good, but it really ramped up towards the end when they got into the whole war with the Dominion and everything. So, yeah, it's a great series, and I'm glad to finally finish it.
Hmm. And we just received in the mail our playtest copy of a game called Forces of Evil. I guess I should have used the Mortal Kombat voice for that.
Yep.
Forces of Evil.
That's your Mortal Kombat voice?
I guess I should have practiced that.
It works
Fatality.
A lot. It works a lot better in type, you know, just all caps. Yeah.
You should finish her.
Where are my teeth? Yeah. So this is a game by Treasure Valley Games. And it is would you call this a deck building game? It's got cards, and I guess you sort of build stuff with it.
Yeah, the cards are the main components, though I don't know. Well, I don't know. Not really a deck building game because you don't build a deck and then play cards with it. But
is it a card game?
You remember the game Dungeoneer, kind of the card game where the cards flip over and then become a map.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to that a little bit.
Okay. Well, that was a great game, so that's a good start.
I would almost call it kind of like a reverse Dungeoneer a little bit, because you are obviously playing the forces of evil. And so you're kind of building a dungeon or kind of cavern complex with these cards that then get populated with, you know, classic RPG monsters, you know, orcs, skeletons, giant spiders, stuff like that. And then there's an area where, again, typical fantasy adventurers, fighter, wizard, thief, and cleric kind of build up, and then at certain times in the game, they swarm through your dungeon. And, you know, the idea is you want to have enough kind of creatures in your dungeon or enough kind of special rooms in your dungeon to prevent the adventurers from getting all the way to the end and kind of like attacking you, kind of the evil overlord. So, I mean, that's not like the end of the game, because there are cards that kind of get drawn randomly that trigger the adventurers swarming in. So it's kind of like you never really know when it's going to happen.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
And the game's going to be up on Kickstarter, so we'll let people know about that. And, of course, we'll let people know our reaction after the official playtest, although Wayne's played it a bit.
Yeah, again, I don't know how much has changed between the playtest I played and the finished version. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it out again, because it was a lot of fun to play.
So in next week's episode, we're going to do another installment of Warriors, and this time we've decided to look at the Apache. And there was a little bit of debate whether or not to do the Apache or the Iroquois. It's kind of split down the American-Canadian divide there.
So in which case we win?
I guess.
2-1?
Well, we're doing Apache. I think there was that a very good argument that there are such a thing as Apache helicopters. I don't know.
Oh, there was also the server and computer parts, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Apache server?
Yes.
That somehow swayed the
win? No!
I tipped the scales.
That's what sold me, I tell you what. So did the Iroquois have a server? I think not.
They might, but they have a hairstyle, so...
Mm. Oh, well.
There you go. So we're going to be doing Apache, and one thing about the Apache that we learned from doing the research is it can be a little bit to define who actually is Apache. Mm-hmm. So if you go back far enough, people think that the Navajo and the Apache were at one time the same group, and then they separated, and then you have like the Plains Apache and other Apache that live in more rocky mountainous terrain. So it was a bit of a challenge, but like all our Warriors episodes, what we've done is we've looked at the information we could glean, and we pulled out some elements that thought were pretty interesting and that would be pretty fun to play for any character that you choose to have in your game. And we had a little trouble with the language. So that's where the Mortal Kombat came in, because we also spent a lot of research by watching Deadliest Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
And watching the Apache fight.
The gladiator and win.
Right.
You know, very and feasible battle there.
And the Mongolian. So really, like, straight out of history there. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of reminded me how when you watch Mortal Kombat, or in Japan when you watch, like, sports shows, and they'll be like, Eishi Malan! Or finish him.
Yeah, they do that. They kind of do that cheesy radio announcer voice, don't they?
So instead of doing the native tongue, as we normally do in Warriors, we are going to do Mortal Kombat tongue. Because that's very sensitive to the Apache.
I know, I was thinking that too.
You know, actually, when it comes down to it, we're actually probably doing them a favor, because all the mangling we've done of these foreign words that we don't know.
Yeah, good point.
And there's a lot of Scandinavians. Could you not have done that for the Vikings? So the first element that we thought was pretty good to explore is guerrilla warfare. The Apache were experts at guerrilla warfare.
And do you think that's because they were constantly like raiding each other and Mexican settlements as well?
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, they did have that. What was their culture of ownership? Was it different than what we would normally think of?
Now, the article I read didn't really go into detail about what their culture of ownership was. As you said, it was just kind of said it was very loose, and so that led to raiding between, you know, groups within themselves and, you know, neighboring groups, whether they were pretty much regardless of who they were. So, I mean, it didn't go into detail about how they saw ownership, but as you said, it was obviously very different from what most people consider today.
Well, yeah, I think you're totally right there, Wayne. It's pretty similar to like when we talked about the Mongols, that this their method of warfare kind of grew out of the life that they lived. I mean, they lived in a very some of them anyway lived in a very mountainous terrain that was also with sparse desert in between. So he couldn't really have horses when horses came to the Americas. So the surprise tactics would have worked really well in that kind of terrain. And just as you were saying, they seem to have a pretty loose interpretation of property, at least compared to Western style. And yeah, so I think so. I think guerrilla raiding probably just kind of grew out of the culture as it was.
Yeah, I read that they were kind of forced, I believe, west by other groups kind of, you know, moving in. And so that's kind of why they were on that, you know, rocky land as opposed to, you know, other groups of like, you know, plains Native Americans. Mm-hmm. So
it's hard to tell too, because, you know, the history spans thousands of years before even, you know, the white man came. So
that would be, I mean, like tangent already in the episode, but that would be something pretty interesting to explore in a game, like this idea of ownership, you know? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you think about in a typical fantasy game, like the thief maybe is the only character who, or is the only character who will steal from other characters because they're hey, just playing my character, just playing the thief, you know? But imagine a game where the idea of ownership of property is kind of that different from what we understand, and where it's like, it's not what equipment are you carrying or what are you using, it's what are we using, and I'm just going to go through your pack and take this and use it, and I kind of expect you to do the same thing. You know, maybe I'm carrying it today, but you know, maybe you'll be carrying it later, and yeah, that's not my armor, that's our armor and stuff like that. I think that would be kind of interesting. I don't think I've seen a game that, or characters in the game that really do that?
Yeah, I had really similar ideas when I was thinking about it as well, because I guess the philosophy is that if somebody could take it from you, it's theirs unless you can go and steal it back from them.
Right.
But it's almost like a game. In fact, it was a game between several tribes. And I read that when the Spanish came, that they saw them as almost a resource. You know, there's plenty of food and weapons and armors, and apparently it's even some reports of taking children.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, raising them as part of the tribe.
But isn't that traditional economics anyway, or traditional gaming economics, where people go into dungeons and if they can kill whatever owns it, then they own it now?
Sure, I guess I hadn't really seen it.
Isn't it like a dungeon crawl, as you just raid things?
It is. Yeah, that's certainly. That's one way to look at it. But that's very black and white, and, you know, lots of the times you're saying, well, you know, the people we're taking from in the dungeon, the monsters are evil, you know? Whereas this one, it's, okay, spun out to a fantasy game, yeah, it could be against other races, but this would be against people you kind of saw as yourself. You know, it's a much grayer kind of thing.
I mean, you could play like raiding parties or something that's very mobile. I mean, right. They're nomads, so everything, something I read was when they're talking about the TP was one of them. The one of their houses was called a Wikiet or something like
right,
that.
Right.
Which is a more elaborate TP. I guess the TP was if you were kind of on the poor end. So when looking at these shelters, they were almost disposable, so they didn't really do a lot of cleaning. It just when something got used up, they would just replace it. So it was a very, you know, disposable, mobile society. Yeah, but I think there's a little bit more, though. I mean, yeah, sure, the stealing and the raiding plays into it, because you got to sneak up, and it's easier to just take it rather than to fight for it.
Right.
And they became really good. I mean, we're talking about blacking out their weapons. You know, putting black on their weapons so that they were camouflaged. There's stories of, like, Apache scouts telling their American commander to turn around in a circle, and when the guy turns around, just like, you know, Batman or somebody.
Right.
The person's gone, hiding in thick grass.
And then doesn't pop up upside down going, I'm Batman.
Quick, you see Apache signal.
I hate it when he does that. The Apache scout. and they even had developed a special way of walking. I haven't seen it, so you're only reading the description, but they're walking on the outsides of their feet.
I've actually tried it before.
Oh yeah?
Sounds really uncomfortable.
It's hard to do. When I was younger, I was in the Boy Scouts, and the summer camp we went to was actually run by the local Potawatomi tribe. And so they taught us a lot of different things, like including that kind of walk. And I don't want to sound like I'm bragging something, but I was pretty good at it back in the day.
And I have this image of, you know, the guys going, watch me, I'm going to teach these white kids how to walk like, quote unquote, Indian. And they're all sitting there laughing.
And make sure to throw your legs as wide as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. look at them all waddling down that line.
And what are you, what, 6'2", 6'4", Chris?
Well, I wasn't when I was a kid. But
yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, yeah. Ooh, I didn't see you there. I didn't see you there, Chris. Wow. Ooh, you'd be a great raider. And you'd be like, oh, great.
Yeah, but it was really, really slow, though, because what you'd do is you'd put one foot forward and you'd balance yourself on the outside of your foot, and then you'd just slowly transfer your weight across from your back foot to your forefoot so that even if there was any kind of like sticks or leaves underneath you, it was such a slow motion that it didn't snap or break or anything. But it was very slow to do. Also, I suppose I wasn't really an expert at it.
I can see that, though, you know, because if you're sneaking up on something and, you know, if you're completely camouflaged, well, speed probably isn't what you're going for, you know? It's you know, true. Silence and stealth over getting there quickly.
Mm-hmm. You know, that could be, well, I hesitate to use the word exciting, but I just don't want to use the word interesting.
Look how slow I'm going! Isn't this exciting?
No, but, stealth often in a game is just reduced down to a roll.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there, I mean, you really look into the mechanics of the stealth, but also make the stealth in and of itself, you know, kind of an end, as opposed to just a means. The ability to do it, as opposed to, okay, I just want to go from, you know, across the courtyard without being heard. But, I mean, if you're specialized in guerrilla warfare, you specialize in stealth, I mean, that's really the whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of different tactics they used in addition to, you know, just walking quietly. Like, for example, whenever they escaped from a battle, they would be careful to run across rocky surfaces rather than in desert sand so that they wouldn't leave tracks behind. Yeah, that's something that you could easily incorporate into a game when you're trying to escape from somebody to make sure that you use those kind of tactics.
And they were able to, change camps, even though somebody would be watching their original camp.
They
would be able
too.
To completely change camps, you know, because they would be constructing a fake camp as they went along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'd like drive their cattle a few dozen miles in front of them, with the ones that were keeping cattle anyway, so that they would completely disguise their position.
Well, that's almost kind of like a bit like the Mongolian horseman then, because he's kind of set up that dust cloud or, you know, this big moving shape.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I suppose which tribe was it? Was the Chiricahua, I guess? Chiricahua? It was the tribe that Geronimo was from. But they were supposedly experts at doubling back, so they were really well practiced at going forward, of course, and leaving their trail, but then going backwards along the same trails, like masking their footprints again, so that they would ambush people who were tracking them.
Right.
And I suppose, I think that they used that against other Apache who worked for the U.S. government.
Yeah, like you saying that thing about stealth, Lyle, like, because guerrilla warfare is more than just, I mean, it's stealth, but it's also more than just stealth, as we've been discussing, and it would also be, as, you know, Chris brought up with doubling back and going over rocky terrain, it would be like knowing the ground that you're going to do the fighting on, and knowing the best escape routes if you have to run, or knowing that, you know, as cliche as it sounds, that secret pass, or that maybe more slightly dangerous, but a quicker way, or, you know, kind of the hidden way that other people aren't going to know about to get there. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know how you would do that in a game, but as you said, well, it seems like stealth and ambush just comes down to that dex roll to move silently or hide yourself, which is kind of unsatisfying and kind of boring.
Well, you could always play that up as a GM. You'd say, I want to escape stealthy. I'll say, well, where do you want to go? How do you want to get there? Are you just going to run straight in a straight line as far as you can go, or are you going to take a different route? Something along those lines.
Yeah. With the terrain, I mean, one thing about the Apache, because they were being forced off their land.
Right.
They were fighting on land that they were very, very familiar with. So, I mean, that could be, I mean, we're talking about, like, and some games would have it, you know, like area knowledge or...
Like a ranger's favored terrain or something?
Favored terrain. Yeah. And really play that up. And again, try to make it more of just a die roll. And I think part of this would have to be that if a person chooses to play somebody with, let's say, Apache-esque characteristics, then you say, all right, then learn about the terrain. Like, learn about your land, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're from the forest, fine. Be from the forest and know stuff. And don't come, like a city boy or girl as a blank slate, whether it's in-game material or just learning some basic things about the forest, the tundra, the plains, whatever it is you're from, do that, because that's going to give you some really great ideas on what to do. And, of course, the Apache, then you could look at, you know, how they operated on plains or in rocky terrain. But, I mean, you could just look at anybody who, you know, the Inuit, what did they do when they're on the tundra, you know? Mm-hmm. Or, like, even look at the Finns, you know, in the snow. What did they do against the Russians in World War II?
So what you're saying is do some research about your character.
Well, sure, but, I mean, certainly if you wanted to be a gorilla, I think it what it does is it helps to focus your research. It's just not, oh, I'm going to be this warrior. I mean, what do I study? You know, just like, well, I mean, if you're going to have a gorilla aspect to it, then definitely what kind of terrain do you like to fight in? And... stealth, like, what, you know, look at ninjas or look at Apache or look at other warriors who are famous for their stealth, and what were their tricks? And then any game master is just going to love that.
Yeah, look into survival kind of skills, because guerrillas can't rely on the support of a large army and logistical force behind them. You know, you have to hunt for your own food most of the time.
Yeah, and the Apaches, like Wayne said at the beginning, is like, where did they all come from with that sidetrack? But yeah, why are you stealthy? Why do you fight in a guerrilla warfare? I mean, you could look at the Viet Cong and why do they fight that way? You know, do they want to be in the tunnels? No. So it was like, explore that a bit.
I mean, that was one of the things that I read. It was saying that the Apache were famous for being really ferocious and always fighting to the death. But one website that I read was saying that part of the reason for that is because they were fighting for their homes. You know, they were being invaded through all the history that we have recorded of them. And so they were fighting for their families, for their lives, for their homes. And so that's perhaps one of the reasons that they fought that way, not just because they were this kind of ferocious race.
Yeah, I read that. I mean, I think sometimes people... I mean, there's stereotypes, and then there's the, you know, the pendulum swings the other way, and people try to, no, you know, it was all just Hollywood, but I mean...
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the truth runs somewhere in between. But,
right. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I read the rationale was this. I mean, they're being forced off their land, they're fighting for that, but they're also the mentality, they're very much worried that people would wipe out their family,
mm-hmm.
and then this plays up in not only just First Nations in North America, but, you know, a lot of groups, but... There was a lot of absorption of people and of bands,
mm-hmm.
so they were very worried that they would be absorbed by another band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that really makes gives you a lot of motivation to be ferocious.
Yeah.
As opposed Absolutely. To just I'm mean.
Why are you so ferocious? I took the mean hindrance.
Yeah. you ever watch Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
Oh, I think so. Yeah,
it's really good. It's Jim Henson's Muppets. It's
yeah,
Modern
yeah.
Otter.
And he has a jug band. And Christmas.
Christmas time.
Yeah.
You know, movie titles should always be like that. I mean, Pacific Rim. Come on, just tell me what it is. Like, what does that mean? Yeah. But in it, they have this other band, and in their song, they're like, "We don't brush our teeth because our toothaches help us stay mean." Dun, 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 dun. I mean, obviously, it's for kids, so they can't really say, you know, we're mean because we're worried our women will be raped and our kids will be killed.
Man, bleakest Christmas. Bleakest Jim Henson movie ever, jeez.
Gosh, I find them kind of sympathetic.
He was the nicest frog until they got Miss Piggy.
Oh, cool. I think that wraps up Guerrilla.
yeah.
Guerrilla Warfare.
Nothing ties that up like a good reference to the Muppets.
So the next element that we have is Warcry. Now, we already mentioned about, you know, people saying Hollywood making generalizations and or even fabrications about the Apache, and this is one of them where people are a little split. And this could actually come down to, I think Chris was saying prior to the episode, which particular tribe they came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But the idea was some people thought that, you know, right when they get right up to you, they'll let out like a war cry just to strike fear in the enemy. And some would say because they were all about stealth, they wouldn't do war cries at all. One of those is a little bit more exciting than the other, so we're going to say war cry.
Let me guess, it's the stealth one.
Silent but deadly.
The thing I saw was accompanied by a really cool quote. It says, "You can fight an Apache all day, but you'll never actually see one."
Hey, doesn't say you won't hear him.
Yeah, you hear him. Like right behind you.
Yeah, I poked holes in that. Yeah.
I like the quote that you had, Lyle, about with the war scream. They would wait until the enemy was within a few feet and then jump up with their characteristic war scream. Ah!
Well, to be fair, it's hard to type out sounds.
It's true.
But like, I know it's kind of making a joke of it a little bit, but imagine if you didn't see this group and all you did hear is the war cries. I mean, we've all seen movies or been in a situation where you can't tell where a sound is coming from, or it's coming from like everywhere all at the same time, but you still don't see anything. That'd be pretty scary too.
Well, that's why the Romans invented boots for the marching. Yeah.
I think we talked a little bit about this when we did Legionaries.
Possibly.
And yeah, it was kind of the idea, which would be more frightening, but certainly, like, yeah, if you have a group or an enemy or a character specializing in guerrilla warfare and they're making use of their sounds and noises and people can't, and they use it as misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Here they said they use it, they would get that psychological advantage just as they strike. So you kind of throw the person off guard, like only within a few feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do it in unison, which is always scary, whether or not you're silent in unison or you're making a noise in unison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like when somebody starts clapping and... Oh, no. No one's clapping. Okay.
And they stop. Yeah.
I just started in that war cry and it's like... Woo, 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 oh.
Yeah.
Not yet?
Yeah.
Not yet? All right.
Oh, too soon. Yeah. I thought exactly the same thing. Yeah. Again, I'm kind of wondering how you would do that in a game because... I mean, well, we've seen it in 4th edition D&D with the bards, you know, mocking strike or all that thunder or sonic damage, you know, from a shout or something, which, I don't know, wasn't really a fan of, but...
Yeah, well, I agree completely. I think that it would be nice to have that, if you pulled that kind of flavor into your character, if you got some kind of additional benefit out of it, because that's the reason that people would have done it, you know? If somebody's coming to a position and you're going to attack them, you scream as a means to freak them out so that they're less able to react to your attack. So that should definitely be represented in a game.
Like in a game with skills, I could see that being intimidation, something else. But in games that also have like I'm thinking like World of Darkness that have, you know, perform or something similar. That's a use for the skill as well. A skill that probably doesn't see a lot of use.
Perform War Scream.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a few interesting characters. I mean, there was I can't remember the kit name, but it was in 2nd edition, and the person was, it was in the fighter kit, I believe, or the rogue. Wow, I'm really...
It was in a martial class.
Yeah. It was 2nd edition. But their whole thing was that they were frightening. Like, they were able to do a dazzling display.
Hmm.
And that was intimidating. Pathfinder has a weapon-focused feat that is all about intimidating people around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so why not make that verbal, as opposed to just "here's what I do with my weapon" kind of thing.
I don't know, but what do you do with your voice?
Ah! Yeah.
Oh,
that's nice. Yeah, I mean, and that's fun because people can actually do that. I mean,
I'm sure that would get real old at the table. It's like, oh no, Bob's going into battle again. Here it comes.
The Raw Champions. All right, let's do it.
Yeah, I think that'd be one where you're like, okay, we know you do it. You know, you do it. Just roll. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I guess the guy next to them, all right. Yeah.
Dude, do it again. My wife's going to kick us out. Stop it.
Yeah.
And our next theme is Brutal Finisher. This is scalping. And we have to say that, according to the research we did, the Apache did not invent scalping, and certainly scalping predates the Apache by like 1,000 or so years. And it was very common for people in Asia and Europe to scalp their enemies and use those as trophies. And the Apaches themselves may have learned it from the Mexicans, who kind of had a bounty on Apache scalps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
from what I read is that they did get it from the Mexicans, and it didn't become popular among the Apaches until it was profitable, which was, I think, the U.S. Army was the one that started paying for it first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from what I read, it seemed as if the Apaches were the people who were being scalped a lot more than the ones who were doing the scalping, but...
So again, it comes down to which is more exciting to present as an element, being the scalpee or the scalper, so we decided scalper.
That was a tough choice.
Yeah, it was a really tough choice. Yeah.
Yeah. But we're not saying that they're the only people that scalp. And they did have a very short knife that was very sharp, which was used, of course, to scalp. And it's a bit contentious whether or not they had some sort of knife fighting that went along with this, but they certainly had a very quick and brutal scalping technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess you'd have to, eh? It'd be pretty tough to scalp somebody. Unless you knew how.
I just kind of assumed they did it when they were either dead or incapacitated. You know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I didn't think the live scalping.
Well,
and there's some things, that just seem really horrible. You know, I mean, sure, getting shot with a gun or an arrow, that would really suck. But for some reason, scalping just really sends shivers down my spine.
Well, have you seen that image of the soldier who, I think he was scalped when he was pretty young, like 4 or 6 or something, and survived?
Oh, wow.
Do not want to see this picture.
I don't think I'm going to look it up, but
thank
you.
No, I mean, it's actually not that bad. I mean, he just has like a giant bald patch, like most of his hair is missing, and you're like, wow, yeah, that is kind of nasty. And then there's the image of the skull. I think it's of a woman. With like a big long, kind of puncture wound above one eye, that was a result of scalping. Wow. And you're like, wow, someone was a little too eager there, because I don't think you have to go through the bone. But.
I read that they paid different rates, different bounties on scalps for men and for women. And a quote from, I think it was a U.S. Army sergeant, he said, to this day, I'm still not really sure how anybody ever decided whether it was a man or a woman's scalp.
Right.
Yeah. I heard that they didn't scalp Custard because they thought it was... sorry, that's not the Apache, but Custard wasn't scalped because they thought it was bad medicine because he was blonde.
Interesting.
Yeah, be cursed.
Right. I could kind of see it, again, not knowing how prevalent scalping was and what kind of significance it had. If you do kind of design a culture where... And I get in the game sense, design a culture where, having this trophy... kind of shows what a great warrior you are, or shows how many people you've beaten, or that you're important. And the implication or the expectation is when you lose and when you get beaten by these guys, you are going to get scalped. Well, then imagine what an insult it would be to then not scalp someone. You're like, no, I don't want you as a trophy. You're not worth cutting off, this part of your displaying.
Yeah, I think I'd be okay with that.
I'm not saying leave you alive. I'm just saying, now you're dead, and we don't want you. But all right, fine, fair enough. There goes that idea.
It's certainly just that concept, and doesn't necessarily have to be scalping, because scalping brings up two things. It brings up the trophies, which could actually be for, your own personal trophy, or kind of the bounty you'd sell to somebody.
Right.
And it can also be the idea of just doing something so brutal when you defeat a foe, like a finishing move. I mean, like that flourish. You watch
Mortal Kombat? Rip out his spine.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat, or you watch Spartacus.
Oh, yeah.
Predator.
Yeah, Predator. It was a Predator movie that taught me the entire spinal column comes out as one piece.
Yeah. Only verified later on in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
So I think that can be a lot of fun to play with, is just what is your finishing move, and maybe not just something like, oh, I'll just cut his throat, but like really do something to the person.
Well, again, yeah, it kind of goes into what we said in like Gladiators, where you're like, no, you're not playing for the crowd as a gladiator, but as you said, it kind of has to be something brutal and gruesome to, you know, really display how great you are. And I'm sure there are some groups out there who do not want to use this, because the DM would be like, okay, what's your finishing move? And, you know, I'm sure some players would come up with some really sick stuff, and you're like, great, we are not using that ever again.
Yeah. You know, actually, this it might be a little off track, but it's connected anyway. As I mentioned last week, I just recently started playing Shadowrun with some guys, and actually a signature move like that is listed among the hindrances in Shadowrun.
I could see why.
Yeah, and I think part of it is in Shadowrun, you know, part of it is being a shadow, so you have to remain inconspicuous, and, you know, you don't want the corporations to figure out who you are, so leaving some kind of trail would be pretty bad for you. But, you know, it takes time, it allows people to know who you are, so there's a definite downside to doing that kind of an action.
It's like the calling card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like all of Batman's villains, they gotta let you know, and they can't get away with it, and even when they try, they still gotta leave.
Yeah. Or Batman, for that matter.
Batman's finishing move is you're going to jail?
Well, yeah, it leaves them hanging tied up upside down, or like with a little bat symbol or something written on them.
Oh, yeah. I suppose.
Like Spider-Man leaves them in a web.
Yeah. Or I was just thinking, the ones I saw, like Batman usually leaves them so, like, you know, traumatized, like, oh, giant bat. You're like, oh, well, gee, it was Batman.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's that.
Yeah, after a while, though, they'd be like, oh, no, it was Batman, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. The third time.
Yeah.
Poor Bat.
Yeah. But, no, I was thinking, like, even in history, as we said, like, yeah, other groups were scalping long before the Apaches, and, you know, it wasn't exclusive to the Apaches, but I could see, you know, take that to, like, a fantasy or some other setting where, yeah, as you guys said, it's a calling card, so you know who ransacked this town, because there's a pile of scalped bodies over there. Or it's like the Reavers from Firefly, you know? You come across like a bunch of bodies, or you see those ships with the carcasses, you know, strapped to the front, and you know exactly who you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And that can be really scary.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's actually, I think it's part of some fantasy settings, is, you know, taking trophies from, like, keeping orcs' teeth or minotaur horns or something like that.
I haven't read everything, obviously, but I don't remember any kind of fantasy cultures where that was culture-wide or society-wide. I just kind of remember it being as, like, you know, you always get the character like, oh, yeah, I'm going to, you know, take this tooth or, you know, do that.
Yeah, more individualistic. But, yeah. I mean, you know, that said, it's not even just fantasy thing. It carries on into the modern world. And we've heard stories of people in Vietnam who collected ears of the Viet Cong.
Yep.
It's disgusting, but it happened.
Yeah, and, I mean, there's a more sanitized version of just leaving the, you know, painting planes or crosses or whatever on the side just to indicate how many you've killed.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, you could do it, extend that to tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, you tattoo stuff on you, and that's a sign, scars. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could do, but it's, that's more trophy side of it as opposed to the brutal finish, but.
Yeah, I think it may have been the Sioux, but they did that too. They painted their horses with kills of the enemy.
Hmm. Hopefully they didn't go out in the rain. Oh,
jeez.
No, but scalping definitely combines the brutal finish and trophy, you know, aspect. So you have both. Hey, there's a guy with a whole bunch of, oh, that's hair on his belt. Yeesh. Oh.
And there is something about scalping that is kind of easier than if your trophy is teeth.
Right.
Or something like that. Because, I mean, you could take the ears off. That would be pretty easy because the guy could still be alive. Or it's kind of hard with the teeth, I suppose.
Yeah. It only takes 5 pounds of pressure to pull off an ear.
I did not know that.
My marine buddy taught me that. It's one of the moves that they teach them.
to yank off ears?
It's if you grab the ear and just pull downwards, it only takes 5 pounds of pressure to rip off the lobe.
Yuck.
Yeah.
The lobe or the whole ear?
The lobe, I suppose.
Oh, I got me half an ear.
I'll show you the move next time you're over.
It's like this grotesque trust fall. I'm going to hold on to your lobe, and now I'm going to fall. We'll see if anybody catches me.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to catch you. I'm going to catch you.
Lobality.
Lobality.
And our final element is
Stone Age.
Stone Age culture against Fire Age culture.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I thought was just one of the most intriguing ideas about if you were to play a character like an Apache, is because the culture is so different from kind of the traditional fantasy medieval period. That is, it's most of the people are nomadic or hunter-gatherer societies. Of course, there are ones that that do farm and raise cattle and stuff, but that's more towards the later part of history, like towards the 1800s, after some of those techniques have been introduced from Mexico and from Europe. But yeah, it's just that I think it would be a really nifty twist to play in a game that had that kind of level of technology, and then to plus alpha that, you know, have it against a much more highly technologically advanced society that's coming to take away your land.
I'm wondering if that would be a downer to play, because
if you're going to lose, like if the DM sets up that you're screwed from the beginning, then probably.
Well, I was just wondering how you would do it, right? Because, again, I'm thinking kind of a typical science fiction trope is, you know, yeah, running up against a culture that's superior to you. Mm-hmm. And this would kind of be the same thing. And I think the GM would have to balance it where it could be really easy to just wipe out the PCs, the players. Because mm-hmm. obviously they have access to inferior technology compared to what their opponents have. So you could do it, certainly, mm-hmm. and it could be a lot of fun, because then it kind of makes sense a little bit to either trade up your weapons, you know, which people are constantly doing in a lot of fantasy games, you know, oh, you know, another plus one sword or whatever, so I'll just throw this regular sword away.
Mm-hmm.
But there also would be pressure. I don't know how to use this. I literally do not know how to use this. I see people using it. I can't use it. And do I even want to use it? Because it's a symbol of people that are attacking me. So, you know, there could be tension there between using superior weapons versus using traditional weapons. So.
Well, I think the adaptation was a big part of the culture. Not so much for the Apache, more for some of the more Midwestern Plains Indians who used horses after the introduction. And they really made them their own. They were famous for being light cavalry, much better than the army.
Absolutely, and I was certainly extrapolating there. You know, I was not trying to say that that was what happened with Apaches at all, but mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know.
It's definitely playable. I mean, if you're playing in a balanced system, like any disadvantage they have for being low tech is going to be counteracted by this amazing, if we're using Apache, amazing stealth, mm-hmm. almost supernatural stealth, because you've got to balance the point somehow.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, what you could do with the weapons could be really, really intriguing. I mean, are they going to steal the modern weapons and have this crazy collection of modern and primitive? Are they going to avoid them, like you suggest, that because they're evil? Or are they going to use them and be totally inept at them?
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a few things that you could do. I know in the West End Star Wars game, they had a Wookiee-like race that was very primitive, and their physical stats were off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the really big advantage of low tech. You know, and the Game Master just made sure they play. Like, you've never seen any of this stuff before. You really got to role play this. You can't just like take all the physical stats, and then first game say, "Okay, now I get a blaster."
Yeah, doesn't quite work.
Yeah, and you're just like, "Okay, you shoot your hand off because you don't know how to use it or something."
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the old original Gamma World artifact flowcharts. You guys ever see those? Where they, no. They were these weird flowcharts. Wherever you, every time you picked up a piece of, you know, ancient technology, you literally had to like start at the part that said start and like roll a die. I forget which dice you had to roll, or there were all these branching things, and yeah, it's like, oh, well, you didn't figure it out, and it activates, or you damage yourself, or you blow yourself up. So, I mean, it was interesting, but like a lot of old stuff, I'm like, oh, man, this kind of sucks. I died picking up a piece of tech, you know?
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, also going into it with that, you don't have to play it absolutely realistically. You know, you could take in some more, I don't know, mythological aspects of it. I'm thinking specifically of the Apache religion, because they had their shamans and such who were supposedly had magical powers. They could, you know, divine the future and cure wounds and like predict enemy movements, things like that. I think the war paint that they had kind of gave them blessings. There is invulnerability to blitz or to arrows, or again, be able to like walk without tracks or be able to predict what the enemy was going to do. So add that into something. Magic would be a pretty good equalizer.
Yep. We have tech. We have magic.
I have a gun. I have invulnerability to bullets. How you doing?
Which begs the question, is how did you develop the magic for invulnerability to bullets when you didn't know what bullets were?
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of, I have a gun. I have the ability to detect where water is. Oh. All right.
Yeah. You want trade?
They're like, oh, no, it'll stop arrows. It'll stop bullets. And then, pff, oh, no, it doesn't. No. Need more paint.
Jeez. All of his buddies like slathering it on.
So... But certainly, we see them. Often we see them in a more unconventional science fiction games or post-apocalyptic game, this juxtaposition of primitive and advanced and just some of the characters that you can make. So, I mean, that could be fun. I mean, where it's not so much the setting, it's the actual character itself. Well, I suppose it is a setting because you have a primitive culture, but it's not after, like, a devastating apocalypse. It's just,
yeah,
just kind of, you know, look at what happened in North America.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, it wasn't a devastating apocalypse, at least not all at once. It took over 100 years before, you know, the
well, except for the smallpox.
Well, that's true.
That, yeah.
And also the Trail of Tears. But I mean, talking about a campaign, Geronimo evaded the U.S. Army, almost the entire Western Army, for what, something like 30 years?
Right.
So you could easily play through a campaign like that. Though, yeah. I suppose being on the run for a 30-year campaign wouldn't quite be that much fun. But
yeah. And also with the weapons is... And it's not so much the Apache, but I know like other groups did it where they kind of modified the weapons to a certain extent. And I know, actually, I think the Europeans or the Americans did it where they made the peace pipe tomahawk.
Okay.
And I don't know if it went down to the Apache, but more northern nations, they actually loved it. Thought it was great. You know, just kind of like hybrid weapons start to pop up.
Yeah, that's right. I read, I don't know if it was the Apache, but I read that some nation they carved the rifle butts into their war clubs.
Yeah, it was actually the Iroquois.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys were badass too.
Yeah, I was trying to save that. No, that's good. But I mean, that's a good point. I mean, do that. I mean, make use of what you have. I mean, if they have limited access to the bullets, but they have the guns, so they are going to have to do something more with it. So they might prefer if you're doing science fiction, they would prefer a heavier blaster, not so much because of its rate of fire or anything, which might be slower, but because once they use up one of the energy cells, then they can just bash you with it. So they wouldn't want a delicate, elegant gun.
Well, let's talk about kind of Native Americans and technology. Reminds me of this trilogy of science fiction novels called the Spider Trilogy by W. Michael Gear. And the first book is called The Warriors of Spider. And I just kind of picked this book up at a, you know, flea market. And it's basically Native Americans who all got loaded onto like a ship kind of, you know, towards the near future and just sent off into space. And what happens is you know, Earth kind of develops into a kind of peaceful, you know, exploratory society. And then they eventually find this planet that the group crash landed on. And I think it was a way for them to do primitive culture meets high-tech culture with Native American, you know, tropes. So, and pretty much what happens is, you know, as you would expect, despite technology, the kind of the warriors of Spider, as they're called, fight, you know, the high-tech people to a standstill, and then eventually get absorbed into the Empire as their warrior caste. So, it was actually pretty interesting. It was a good read. I have to find the other two books, but the whole time we're kind of talking about weapons, I'm like, that's what this was.
Oh, yeah, you've just reminded me of another science fiction book. Let's see if I can get it. But it has similar things where they're slightly more primitive, but they're amazing warriors, and then they get absorbed into and become the warriors of a more advanced race.
Right.
And they had a trilogy that I read. It was a real desert motif.
I saw a short story once where humans had been bred to be warrior races. I guess they took the idea that the little gray aliens there were supposed to be the smart ones, and so they bred us to be big and angry.
Hmm. Well, they kind of failed with me, didn't they?
No, it's killing me. Killing me. Just a sec.
I got the big part.
I got the angry.
Well played, Wayne.
How many books does this woman write?
A lot.
Oh, okay. All right, found it. Hmm. It's called the Fated Sun Trilogy.
No relation to the game, I assume.
Did I say Fated Sun?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but no relation.
I did say it because I was correct.
No, when he said no relation, I'm like, yeah. That was pretty cool. I mean, and again, they were experts at the terrain, this race, so they didn't have baths with water. They had sand baths. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And they encounter the humans, and they're fighting the humans because the race that they work for or they're a part of now, or the empire that they're part of, has kind of collided with the human empire, if I remember correctly. But it was certainly enjoyable. It was by an author named C.J. Sarai.
Which one?
Or Cherry.
I'll just spell it for you. The hell with it.
Actually, C.J. Cherry. All right, that ends our episode on Warriors Apache. So we had a few different themes, and I think it's what was really important here, and I'm sure it's really important in all the Warriors, but it's just that it's very difficult to separate the warrior from the culture, so definitely add that into your game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, thank you for joining us on Idlered Hands. Check us out online at www.idlereadhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or you can stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or you can download it off of DriveThruRPG. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or our brand new Google Plus page, and contact us through any of those, or just send us an email, because we always love hearing from all of you. And, yeah, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
See you next week.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.